Park Place Meeting, Sunday afternoon, 25th of May 1975. Throughout history, whenever great religious teachers have arisen, and in their own lifetime, a group of disciples came into close relationship with that teacher, that band of disciples lived up to a point in a state of unity and harmony with each other. But it was not possible, naturally it wouldn't be, it was not possible for this band to be wholly united at all times. I mentioned the instance of the Buddha speaking to Anuruddha, Kimbila and Nanda, who did live in harmony together. Just three of his well over 1,000 disciples. Regarding each other with the eye of affection, living like milk and water blending. But with respect to the whole band of followers, there were dissensions, there were quarrels, upheavals, and so on. There were misdemeanors and wrongdoing, the breaking of the rules of the holy life, of the discipline. And it is because of this that meetings used to be called, the whole question was considered, and some new rule or other had to be introduced. That is how the number of rules went into well over 200 ultimately. And the penalty, the severest penalty imposed, was to be sent out of the order for the worst offenses. They were out of communion, so to say. If you study the several volumes of the Vinaya, which is the book of the discipline, you will find that the words which the Buddha is said to have uttered are severe words. He doesn't mince matters at all. But it must never be thought that he spoke in anger or with discourtesy. Inward discourtesy to the living being as such, however great his fault may have been. He spoke with deep understanding, but he spoke the whole truth and nothing but the truth, pointed out to the person just precisely how wrong his conduct had been, and admonished him accordingly, how to avoid the wrongdoing, and so forth. Now, throughout the world's history, wherever there have been people seriously interested in the religious life, they naturally attempt to form a united group. And this unity comes into being naturally the better we know each other. And it is essential, in order that we may know the other person better, that we know our own self also better and better. He who has full self-knowledge bears no ill will or condemnation towards another. He who knows his own self fully is always poised, compassionate towards anybody and everybody. Now, the Buddhist confessional was a very interesting procedure. Remember, the monastic orders as such, the founding and the growth of monastic orders as such, starts with Buddhism. It doesn't start with Brahmanical Hinduism, that is pre-Buddhistic Hinduism. There were ashrams, little retreats, where of course the teacher taught. He lived just on the fringe of a village, in a little clearing, a little woodland, and he rarely had more than 5 or 6 pupils around him at any one time. It's very interesting, because they laid it down as a principle of education in those days, that it wasn't possible for a teacher, however capable, to give his full attention to more than 5 or 6 pupils at one and the same time. I think we are beginning to learn that in our educational practice in modern times. Now, the confessional was along these lines. Whosoever had defaulted in some way or other went to his immediate superior, because there were grades of teachers, the old established and the highly proficient ones, and lesser grades and so forth, and told him that he had done wrong, this wrong. And the person who listened to this confession said, "Yes, indeed, you have done wrong. It is well that you yourself see it, because that will help you to avoid further wrongdoing." And then the wrongdoer asked for his pardon. It was granted by his superior, who in turn asked for the pardon of the wrongdoer. It's an extraordinarily significant thing. You see the tremendous significance of this. He whose duty it is to pass sentence, so to say, also needs the forgiveness from the wrongdoer for having to pass sentence. What an extraordinary sensitivity it shows. What extraordinary insight psychologically it shows. That sort of procedure completes the whole event. There is nothing, so to say, unworked out or left over as an impression for future trouble. Because however just and right a sentence may be, there is always resentment deep down in the unconscious, if not in the conscious mind, of the person who has received the sentence. But in pardoning the sentencer, him who sentences, you see, the whole thing is worked out. And it was not merely a verbal formality. It had to be fully felt, fully understood, quietly, silently. And then there was peace and harmony psychologically between both of them. This is something most worthwhile considering. That was, I'm just giving you a very brief outline of this confessional, the practice of the confessional, that they both pardoned each other. Now, I'm saying this because I'd like to suggest something which we might do now, if you like. You know, we have been experimenting with this practice of looking at each other, looking at somebody, writing down the impressions, and so forth. We did that on the first afternoon, Friday afternoon, and yesterday we went into a deeper element in connection with it, a very much deeper element, you remember. Right. Now, if you like, I mean, you might feel too constrained, too shy, you might feel, I'm not ready for quite this thing, in which case, quite all right, don't participate. But let us just rearrange ourselves a little bit only, and see somebody with whom we are in disharmony. Put it in childish terms, oh, I don't like that person's behavior this way and that way, and it's such a bore, or whatever it is, you see. Or he's such a conceited person, and so overbearing, or so simpery, whatever it is. Somebody with whom we are in disharmony. And if one can feel energetic enough to go to that extent, go to that person, and the two can go out and talk together about it. It is very hard to do this. It is tremendously hard. But any one such act, if it is done with inward willingness, that must be there. If you find yourself unwilling, don't do it. Because that would be the wrong way. it might produce even worse complications. But if there is the inward willingness and the heart is ready to be cleansed, do it. You see?
Supposing this person doesn't wish to go out with us.
Yes, that is that is really a problem. If the other person doesn't wish to, well then, you have shown your willingness. Go back to your seat. Wait in patience. Bearing no resentment or ill will or anything. It's a very difficult thing. I said at the beginning of this school, you remember, they were going to do hard work. I mean, it's all very nice, you know, to come and sit in all, it happens in all these schools, we come and sit and listen to inspiring and elevating and talks and all the rest of it, and we say all the nice things, the proper things. But how different do we become? Does the tiger and the bear and the fox and the wolf within us, the snake, does it change? Or do we try to hide all that away and present an image of the nice person?
Shall I be the first guinea pig? And I don't bear resentment to anybody who yes. wants to come up to me you. And would like to...
No. If you bear resentment to anybody, you go of your own free will and accord to that person.
That's more difficult.
That's the thing.
Okay. Well, it's not resentment, it's misunderstanding.
Whatever it is.
Right. If the person doesn't want to come with
then you sit down again.
Say so. And when it comes.
Yes. Pleasure.